And this hour, Linda Moulton Howe, we're going to come right back with Linda, who's live at the 19th Annual Ozarks UFO Conference in Eureka Springs, Arkansas, to talk with her about a story we brought to the national limelight, and that is the disappearing honeybees. And then later on this hour, phone call conversations with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. Well, welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie with Linda Moulton Howe. Linda, where have all the honeybees gone?
Well, George, I continue to follow this disappearing honeybee phenomenon, and I have the sad news to report that when hives in Toronto and Saskatchewan, Canada, were opened up in the last week of March, at least 40% had either disappeared or, in another strange twist of this mystery, in some Canadian hives, thousands of bee bodies were found dead in the hives.
See, that's a first, because when you reported last time, the bee bodies, the carcasses, whatever they are, they weren't in the hives.
Well, and that is in the majority of cases, including in Toronto. But some were stuffed with dead bees. Now, this is another interesting part of the Toronto situation, because we're going to talk about other places. The bees, where there were hives that were loaded with dead bodies, they ranged from dry and desiccated, which means that they had to have been dead for a long time, all the way up in the same hive to what one of the beekeepers called a fresh body, meaning he thought it had only been dead for a few days. That means death over a huge timeline here. And we know that the Pennsylvania beekeepers that I was talking with Dave Hackenberg in the Coast last month, and he had found all of his the empty hives that he had, and made the point that even the baseboards of the hives were completely devoid of anything. Everything was empty. Well, if we go to Europe, the UK's Telegraph newspaper just recently reported that from meetings in the EU, at least 9 countries are now reporting massive disappearances of honeybees, similar to the colony collapse disorder that American beekeepers started reporting last fall. And the countries that were listed by UK's Telegraph with disappearances now are Spain and Poland, which we knew about earlier. Now, Greece, Croatia, Switzerland, Italy, Portugal, Germany, and England. And to everyone's surprise, in the UK, where genetically modified crops have been resisted and beekeeping is on a smaller scale with less pesticide use than in the United States, honey beekeepers in London opened up hives the end of March, and they found at least half of their hives missing, just gone, no bodies anywhere. And in the early first week of April, I talked with the chairman of the London Beekeepers Association, John Chappell, and he said, this is a quote, "In London, we normally expect to have 10% to 20% losses every winter in our bees. But this year, at the last meeting of London members, loads of people reported far more than the normal percentage. And in talking around, they all came up with the same thing that is happening. The bees just disappeared. There were no dead bees to look at, so we had nothing to examine. And they all had plenty of stores," which is the English way for saying honey. "They had plenty of honey left. And a phenomenon that we cannot understand is that they don't appear to be robbed out by other bees." Well, that is exactly what Dave Hackenberg said in his own voice on Coast before, when he said the thing that struck him was that when he opened up his hives and found not a single bee body anywhere, but there was all of that honey and the pollen, and that the wax moths and the beetles did not come as they normally would as opportunists to get that honey, suggesting that there might be something toxic in the hive itself, in the honey that is left, or something about the hive that was left by the bees before they all disappeared. Now, finally, Congress is beginning to pay attention to the colony collapse disorder. On March 29th, the House Subcommittee on Horticulture and Organic Agriculture held a meeting in Washington, D.C. with several of the scientists, beekeepers, and other agencies involved in researching this phenomenon. Dr. Diana Cox Foster, professor of entomology at Penn State in College Park, Pennsylvania, told me that the situation in Ontario and Saskatchewan, Canada, was discussed in which there have been massive disappearances of bees there, as well as this complication of why is it that some beekeepers in Ontario opened up hives and had both the dry desiccated, the fresh dead in some of the hives, but not all. And the Brent Halsall, the president of the Ontario Beekeepers Association in Greeley, Ontario, said that he was so surprised when he opened up his own hives and found this kind of mixed signal, which nobody understands. We know that the colony collapse disorder has been characterized by the complete disappearance, but mixed with complete disappearance, they have had the presence of bodies. And now Diana Cox Foster and other scientists are going to try to get bodies from Canada. They're in the process of doing this so that they can add them to the bodies that they have retrieved from Florida, Pennsylvania, and California to study. And I have learned that the science is taking some fascinating directions. Back on October 25th, 2006, which interestingly enough, that is the same month that the beekeepers in Pennsylvania and Florida were reporting these massive disappearances.
Right.
October 2006, a research consortium supported by the National Human Genome Research Institute announced for the very first time in human history the publication of what they call a high-quality draft genome sequence of the Western honeybee. And they found that its genome is more similar to humans than any insect sequence so far. And why is this important? What they are now going to try to do at two institutions, the only two in the United States that have this ability, is research at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign and the U.S. Department of Agriculture's lab in Beltsville, Maryland. They have laboratories there where they're going to try what they call microarray analysis. And this is taking this brand new genome sequence of the bee, only 6 months old, and they are going to now try to imagine in your mind, they've got some frozen healthy bees done for science in one of the labs from 7 years ago, and they're going to lay out the sentence, the genome of that bee, let's say, on one side of the table. Then they're going to take the genomes from the Pennsylvania, from the Florida, and from the California bees, and they hope to add Canada, and they want to lay those genomes out and compare them to what they have from healthy bees 7 years ago. And this is amazing. They are hoping that in this very refined, sophisticated test, that they're going to be able to see if the colony collapse disorder bees have been exposed to some kind of pesticide or fungal toxin or other poisonous substance that might leave a footprint in the genomes. And the way and why this would happen. When a human or a bee or an earth life is exposed to poison, it can turn on or turn off certain genes, and in the process produce proteins that might be made to combat the poison. And what they're hoping is, because right now, George, bottom line, nobody has an answer to all of these massive bee disappearances, and they are now going to this microarray analysis, hoping that the genome of the bees themselves might have this footprint that could point them in the direction of some toxic assault, if that is what might have happened. And to think that it's in 6 months, this tiny window has opened up. At the same month, they never had this genome for the honeybee before. And October is also the month that the beekeepers realized that they had a real problem. So this is brand new science. And on Wednesday this week, I talked again with Dr. Diana Cox Foster at Penn State, and she has just received new data from Columbia University analyses. There, they were also working at a molecular level with genome sequences, and what they've done is they have confirmed with a molecular measurement technique that there is a unique set of bacteria in the gut of some bees that they've never known existed before. This is brand new also. Now, what the scientists do not know, are these bacteria, these unique bacteria necessary for good health in normal bees, sort of like the bacteria that humans need in our intestines, and are the newly discovered bacteria actually missing in the colony collapse disorder bees? Or is it the other way around? Is the newly discovered unique set of bacteria only in CCD-affected honeybees? Well, the next step of the Columbia University research is going to be to use what is known as a at a genetic level to look at the genomes of bacteria, viruses, fungi, and protozoans that they have found in the honeybee guts and compare them to what is found in normal bees. So now I'm talking about two different approaches, both involving going to the genome level, trying to find what could be the culprit that is causing all of this these massive disappearances that they're calling colony collapse disorder. Now, this molecular and genome research at Columbia, plus the genome sequence work at the University of Illinois and the U.S. Department of Agriculture lab in Beltsville, Maryland, to see if there are footprints of gene reactions to toxins, this could all take 2 or 3 more months before they have new data. And meanwhile, Jerry Brummenschenk at the University of Wisconsin and toxicologist Dr. Chris Mullen, they are working with another USDA lab in Raleigh, North Carolina, to analyze the pollen and the wax contents found in these deserted hives because the beekeepers say something has to be wrong that these wax moths and these beetles don't move in on this deserted honey. Well, one that they're going to be especially looking at or looking for are what are called the neonicotinoids, such as imidacloprid. This is a nicotine-based poison that really didn't start being used heavily until about 4 years ago. And now today, and this has been learned also only in the last several months, the neonicotinoids, these nicotine-based pesticides, are now in lab tests have been shown that they can interfere with bee memories. And if a bee doesn't know how to get back to its hive or communicate to other bees what's going on, that may be part of the problem. Well, now, all of this, the congressional hearing on March 29th, these brand new scientific research directions, they're going to bring all of this together on April 23rd to 24th at the USDA ARS lab in Beltsville, Maryland, because the House Subcommittee on Horticulture and Organic Agriculture has asked the scientists, beekeepers, and others who attended that March 29th congressional meeting to return now with specific research plans and budgets to try to get the honeybee industry healthy again. And as Dr. Cox Foster told me this week, this is a quote, it's becoming difficult for farmers to contract pollinators because right now there are not enough honeybees to go around. And one of the, we'll say, the back channel rumors that I have also learned in just the last week and want more confirmation, but I'll share it in the context, that what I understand is that some almond growers have quietly contacted some congressional offices because it appears that the 2007 pollination in the almond groves in California might have been weaker than normal.
Of course.
As the honeybees continue to disappear in large numbers, and that includes the Australian bees imported to California to pick up the slack, they disappeared as well. Healthy bees from Australia disappeared here in North America. And why would they be contacting Congress now if this is true? It's because they know, and they don't want the public to know yet, they would know that this big California almond crop, it's the largest in the world. They grow almonds stretching for 300 miles in the Central Valley, and that they may be facing almond shortages at the end of 2007. And if they are, like dominoes falling, if people cannot get to the bottom of why this is happening, and if the honeybees, and now in England, they're reporting declines in bumblebees, We know the National Academy of Sciences here is concerned about the general decline of pollinators throughout all of North America. If this continues, what is going to happen to what essentially in the, we'll call it the business side of the world, says it's a $14 billion annual industry that honeybees are responsible for pollinating. One in three bites of food are pollinated by honeybees. What happens now as we keep going forward? And if there's no magic button that anybody has come up with to replace these bees, the hope is that the summer of 2007, that they will see some kind of a turnaround in the health of the bees. But right now, nobody knows if that's going to happen. And more beehives are being opened up as we speak throughout the month of April in the higher northern latitudes. And so far, the story appears to be the same. Wherever hives are opened, bees are either dead or so many have completely disappeared. And right now, I'm reporting to you tonight the very latest attempts at the most sophisticated levels of genome research. That's where this is headed, because they haven't been able to find an answer in any of the other directions so far.
Well, Linda, I think they're going to find that tampering with Mother Nature may have had a devastating effect, not only on the honeybees, but on so many other things on this planet that they are probably just going to find out about. That's my gut.
And the scientists that I have talked to, if I said there was one consensus by every scientist, it is, we don't know that it's really one thing. It's probably going to come down to an array. It could be the neonicotinoids plus the impact of global warming that is causing changes in the behavior of the habitat to a huge variety of issues. And there's one thing, I've had wonderfully intelligent emails from so many Coast listeners, and I'm so grateful for your emails to earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And so many of you are asking me, could it be the sun? Could it be electromagnetic field shifts, as there appears to be perhaps a long-term pole shift on the Earth? And here's the problem with those two hypotheses. If the colony collapse disorder has been confined to, it hasn't gone beyond 24 states in the United States yet, and I don't know of any reports beyond Saskatchewan and Ontario in Canada, and now the nine countries in Europe. To my best knowledge, as of today, tonight, I don't know of this occurring in the Southern Hemisphere, and specifically not in Australia and New Zealand. And therefore, when you talk about what kind of hypothesis might explain it, if it's solar radiation, that would affect the whole planet. Therefore, there is something about this that seems to be specific to certain areas. Why? That is still an unanswered question.
Well, I got to tell you, chemtrails also comes to mind, Linda. And again, maybe some of these genetically modified crops, maybe something's going on. You know, for the last 100 years, beekeepers have had some problems with their hives, but never on this kind of devastation.
And Mr. Chappell in London said, he put it so beautifully, Linda, we've been through Varroa mites. We've all dealt with mites, and that's the United States, Canada, anywhere that there have been bees. And he said, but with the Varroa mites, we had bodies, and we knew what it was, and we came back with pesticides to kill those mites. And he said, what if the pesticide cocktails that we've been using to kill the mites is now killing the bees?
Linda, stay with us. We'll be back with you a final half hour. We call it Conversations with Linda. So we will flip the switch, get the phone lines open for you, just to get ready as well, because at the top of the hour, Friday the 13th, open lines. Well, this honeybee story has all the makings of a Hollywood full-length movie, doesn't it? My, oh, my, oh, my. We'll be back in a moment. Conversations with Linda on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast with Linda Moulton Howe. And, of course, let's go to your phone calls. And here we go. Earthfiles.com, by the way. Linda's web address. Linda, when do you leave the conference, by the way?
Sunday. I'll be back Sunday night.
Back you go to the West Arizona, huh?
To Albuquerque, New Mexico, that is drier with blue skies compared to this wet Midwest or midsection.
It has been soggy west of the Rockies. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, hello. Linda, I love your work and very much appreciate your investigations.
Thank you.
My really strong intuitive feeling is that the honeybee loss is related to genetically modified plants. I'm wondering if you're aware of any of the scientific studies being done in that direction.
Yes. This was definitely on the checkoff list at Penn State and the University of Pennsylvania, who first identified the colony collapse disorder, and Diana Cox Foster and a whole array of people, Marianne Fraser, the group that I had on Coast last month. There are now, I think it's more than 100 scientists in various parts of the country are trying to figure this out. And they all say that they cannot find a direct link, an experimental physical evidence link, that would tie directly the GMOs that exist so far with this honeybee collapse disorder. And that was what was very important in talking with that beekeeper in London. He made the point. He said, I know myself, he said, I would jump to the conclusion that things like pesticides and GMOs might be responsible. But he said in England, they have resisted GMOs. England is one of the countries that does not want genetically modified crops, and the government has resisted Monsanto and Novartis and others trying to put crops into England. They also have, they do use pesticides, but England has also tried to resist some of the heavy pesticide use, and yet, as Mr. Chappell said in London, here they are. They're opening up honeybees, and they are astonished, the hives, and that they are finding them empty. And he said that one of the London beekeepers in the Beekeeper Association, of which he's a director, has been raising bees and working with honeybee hives for 60 years, 60 years, the oldest, longest beekeeper in the London Beekeeper Association. And that beekeeper said that whether it's been mites or any other assaults, that the one thing that separates this from any phenomena that he's seen in his 60 years raising bees is the complete emptiness of the hives. Nothing on the boards, nothing in the hives, nothing in the ground. And that is what beekeepers started saying in the United States last fall, that this phenomena of complete and total massive disappearance is what separates this from all of the other assaults on bees previously.
Okay, thanks. Appreciate you being part of the program. East of the Rockies, you're up with Linda Moulton Howe on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello?
Hello. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, I sent Linda, hello Linda, I sent you an email in reference to a hunch on the bees. Is it possible that the heating of the saccharin or diet drinks is causing a thalidomide effect on the babies?
Well, I remember your email, and sir, I thought this is an endearing email because you're really trying to think, but it made me laugh because I thought you'd have to have the world where all this is turned up with all of these pop cans and open Pepsi and Coke for the bees to get to for this to be a reasonable hypothesis, because step back from this. For the bees to be exposed to something in the saccharin or pop or something to be responsible for these disappearances in 9 countries, 2 provinces in Canada, and 24 states in the United States, you just can't reasonably tie it to open food that humans are leaving around, I don't think. But the one thing I do appreciate is the fact that there are so many Coast listeners who are even doing research and sending it, and that you're really, really paying attention now to this story and to coming up with some kind of an idea and wanting the same resolution that the rest of us do. So I really appreciate the emails. And again, my email address is earthfiles@earthfiles.com. And to remember that, think of a reporter who's filing news about the earth, That's Earth Files.
You know, Linda, all the investigations that you've done, they have been wonderful. This honeybee story is dangerous. You know, Albert Einstein once said, once the honeybees go, 3 to 4 years, mankind starts to wither away and go as well. What a bizarre thing if one was a conspiracy theorist to think about a way to control the world's population, just start eroding the food source.
Well, whether it's calculated or not, this is serious because the pollinators, as I said in the other half hour, in addition to honeybees, there are bumblebees, which are declining now by observation in the UK. The other pollinators include the honeybees, the butterflies, the hummingbirds, even bats. And if you take all of the pollinators of this whole planet and you take the statistics that relate, whether it doesn't matter which country you're in, 1 out of 3 bites of food around the world are attributable to the honeybee or to pollinators, let's put it that way, the pollinators of the world. There are no fleets of humans going around into almond trees and apple trees and blueberries and strawberries and hand pollinating. I mean, you know, it's not possible. The bees, the insect world, the hummingbirds have all been for what? Since the beginning of plants, they have been the ones that have made it possible for the flowers to be pollinated so that there would be fruit. And a lot of people don't realize every single apple that you have ever eaten existed because a pollinator, specifically honeybees, pollinated the flower on those apple trees to produce the apples. And that applies to the almonds and to vegetables and berries and on and on. And if this continues, and we're talking about a serious decline, and that statement that Dr. Diana Cox Foster said, there is now a shortage in the pollinators to go around. How far does this go in food production truly is affected, at least in the Northern Hemisphere? And why so far has it not shown up in the Southern Hemisphere? And yet those bees transported from Australia to the California almond orchards then ended up disappearing as well.
Wild card line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there.
Hey, this is Richard out here in Utah.
Hi, Richard. Thank you.
Thanks, Linda. I listened to the last report with George. Hey, I had some bees when I was living out here with my ex-wife, and I got involved with my friend Rod in 2003. And I got one hive, and then a hive split, and he showed me how to take care of that. And then he died, Rod. And then his wife, Carolyn, took over. And then I went over there, and I brought her some more bees because she said, hey, all my bees are gone. And I said, well, I've got like 2 or 3 hives, and they're just getting huge. And so I got some more bees from Jones Bees in North Salt Lake. And then I went out there, and 2004, I separated from my wife and went to California, and I came back. And she said she sold the bees to another beekeeper. And then he called me in California. He says, you know, all your bees are dead, and they're all gone. I said, what do you mean they're all gone? I go, you're giving me a lie. And he goes, no. I called Carolyn, and Carolyn said all her bees are gone. And right around the corner in the cul-de-sac from where I live is my friend Phil Groterpest. He calls me and tells me that all of his bees died. And I sprayed my yard with Roundup, and I got another chemical that I used to spray on my fruit trees. I've got 2 peaches, 3 apples, pears, plums, nectarines, cherry trees and such. And I sprayed this stuff on there. And after I got through, you know, checking it out and everything, my wife goes, did you pull the label all the way out and look at it? It says, don't use around bees. And I'm like, uh-oh.
Right. And
I'm like, what is this? Is this? And you're telling me it's this neonicotinoid thing.
Well, they're looking at that neonicotinoid because it is a relatively new pesticide, about 4 years in terms of increasing use. And because, and this is the reason why it has been raised up higher on the list of suspects, when they have done lab tests, they have been able to find out that low levels, really low levels of the neonicotinoids, so low that a lot of machines can't even analyze the percentage, cause the bees to be disoriented, and that in the way they have done the research, the result for the bee is it can't, its memory is definitely interfered with. That's the bottom line. That was reported in the first December 15th report by this colony collapse disorder of scientists, and it was raised as a question mark. And then Dr. Diana Cox Foster explained to me, she said that the labs that are able today in the entire world, think about this, we don't have a lot of sophisticated labs trying to deal and study with pesticide impact on insects anymore. It is something that may come out of this crisis that a whole lot more needs to be done to increase lab abilities. But right now, this issue of how can we measure how much of the nicotine-based pesticide has actually gone into the dead bodies of the few that have been retrieved, and they don't know the answer to that, and they don't know the answer to the question, are the current uses of the nicotine-based pesticides, which they thought originally was going to be less harmful in terms of toxicity,
mm-hmm.
if this turns out to be a new human-produced pesticide that completely screws up the brains of the pollinators, how do we put that genie back in the bottle?
And well, how does it affect us? Let's go to our international line. You're on the air with us. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Germany, George. I've been wanting to talk to you for a while.
Well,
I know all
you.
About the bees and everything. I'm a member of the new One World Order. I know you talked about it before.
Yes, we have. And you're calling from Germany, you said?
I'm in the military.
All right.
I'm a patriot. I'm a general patriot. Under the new One World Order possibility, I think I'm going to be the first presidential general of the United States and possibility of the new One World Order of the entire world. I'm not the Antichrist either. When I rise to power, there will be a whole lot of changes.
Are you a good guy or a bad guy?
You want to listen to me and you decide. I guess I'm for the people of the United States, American people. Basically, like the country of Iraq, I will conquer it like in a week. Iran in a week. All these other countries will be conquered in a week here.
Well, I tell you what, you're calling from Germany, and we've got Linda on for a precious few minutes, so you can call back during open lines. Okay. Let's go to our first time caller line. You're on the air. Hi there.
Hello.
Yes, sir.
Good work you're both doing there, George and Linda.
Thank you.
Have you both heard of global dimming?
Global dimming.
Dimming by the fact that all of the greenhouse gases may end up reducing the amount of photons that reach the surface of the Earth.
Yeah. And after 9/11, after they stopped the planes, all the skies cleared up. My question is, since you're such a good researcher, I would like to know the effects, or if anyone's done any research on the effects of war on the climate. You know, we know that planes are flying all over the place and polluting in the skies, but we also have munitions and grenades and mortars and IEDs and bombs. I've never really heard of anybody doing any research on the effects of all this war going on the planet.
Well, it could be radioactivity, too, for all we know, Linda.
Well, I think that if you take this last IPCC report by the UN, a collection of 2,500 scientists from around the world, this is not a political biased report that's controlled by one country. And the consensus is that the amount of CO2 now being added to by increasing amounts of methane that may continue to increase even more, we have created and are creating a thicker blanket of greenhouse gases around the Earth. That is clear, it is measurable, and it is can be traced back in scientific data to melting permafrost, to cars, to industries, and that is what the IPCC finally reported in 2007. And finally, the Supreme Court of the United States said to the government, the Environmental Protection Agency has a responsibility to reduce what is clear data scientifically that the emissions from cars and industries are increasing the greenhouse gases on this planet, and they are causing more warming than might have happened in some natural fluctuation. And that is where we are. It is no longer arguable. The Earth is warming. It doesn't matter anymore about the cause. It is warming. The ice is melting faster than anybody ever expected in the Arctic and in sections of the Antarctic. And right now, I think that everybody needs to understand that there is a range of projections about how this warming is going to play out over the next 90 years and beyond. At the least warming, we're talking about a possibility of a meter of sea rise over the next 50, 80 years. At the worst case, it could be 15 feet. And you think about how that is going, either one, 3 feet to 15 feet. How is that going to affect the 100 million and more people who live in coastlines? Because as this incrementally continues to rise, insurance companies are going to refuse to insure anybody who's living in coast. It's already started to happen. It will just continue to happen more. And that means eventually that there will not be any way to economically sustain people on the coastlines. And where are all of these people, for example, 35 million people that have been dependent upon the glaciers of Mount Kilimanjaro for some of their water supplies? Mm-hmm. Kilimanjaro is expected now to be completely free of ice earlier than expected, maybe as early as 2010 or 11 or 12. Once that happens, you're talking about populations that are going to be forced to migrate because they will not have the water, they will not have the food. And what happens on this planet when huge populations in the millions are going to be forced as eco-refugees to move? The problems that are upon us are, over the next 90 years, going to be huge and increasing. And right now, as one scientist I interviewed, Dr. Steven Schneider, this week, it's at Earth Files in a report, it's actually in a report about the first 2007 crop pattern that has now been found and reported and photographed, believe it or not, in the Phoenix area in the Chandler suburb. And the reason why I appended the interview with one of the people who contributed so much to the IPCC report has been the question for several years about the possible link between the strange symbols and implied mathematical language, perhaps, if we understood it, in the crop formations, that life is not guaranteed, and that what we have been coming up against in all these years of patterns have been something trying to tell us life is not guaranteed and you're coming up to some kind of a tipping point. If the tipping point now, we should have addressed 25 years ago.
Thank you, my dear. Enjoy your conference, Linda.
Well, thank you, George.
Linda Moulton Howe, earthfiles.com. I'll be back now 2 hours of Friday the 13th open lines with a good luck, bad luck hotline.